And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is the second Tuesday of each month. It is Understanding Autism from 3 to 4, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon, all the way from Houston, Texas. You know, I always love to say all the way from Houston, Texas.
I noticed you do that.
And I don't, I've been in Houston once, but it was just a layover on a plane trip, so I never saw Houston.
Oh, well, you should come out and...
I want to go to Gilly's or something. Have barbecue ribs or
Gilly's.
Dancing. Is that good? Maybe it's not even there anymore. Well, that's probably in Dallas. What am I talking? I don't know. Anyway, welcome. And so, Kimberly, you got a special guest in studio.
I know. We do have a great guest. We have with us Jay Nadio, and he was with us actually a year ago, what would be a year ago tomorrow, right? Okay. So we're so excited to have you. And just for listeners who didn't hear Jay on last year, he's... an adult. He grew up with autism, and he's 25 now, right? Okay. And so he's on the show today to kind of talk to us about some of his life experiences and kind of share some insight, you know, as to, you know, different, you know, places in his life, just growing up and developing into young adulthood. So welcome.
All right. Thank you, Kim.
We're so glad to have you.
Right. And thank you, Paul, and of course, and thank you, David. And thank you guys for inviting me to come back. I'm honored to be back. It's always a great pleasure listening into this show. I listen to it more frequently and such, whether just at home or just when I'm on work and security watch if during the day, if I have to be working for APS or another client or such
I'm
working through veteran security. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. I know Jay is like our biggest fan. He's always promoting us on Facebook and just very supportive, and we really very much appreciate it.
So, you're very welcome.
So I want to ask you, just a little bit about your life. And so I'm curious, what age were you diagnosed with autism?
Okay. Well, it was November 1993. So I was born November 1st of 1987, All Saints Day. I was referred to by my elementary school psychiatrist / speech therapist, Nancy LaPratt. She told my mother that to refer to me to Dr. Ron Melmed, who, as some of you listeners may know, is one of the co-founders of the Southwest Autism Research and Resource Center here in Phoenix, located at 18th Street and Van Buren. And Before SARC came into existence in 1997, it was just people like Dr. Melmed. If you referred to someone like him, that was your only best chance of getting the treatment, the help that you needed. So Dr. Melmed, what he diagnosed me with originally was pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. So it's the same thing as Miss Montana, 2012, Alexis Weinman, was also diagnosed with at age 11 for her. It's what I call one of the if syndromes and such, meaning you do have some autistic traits, but they're not exactly quite sure if you are autistic. So that's the kind of a classification you would get.
So that's sort of a catch-all phrase, sort of?
Yeah, it's kind of like a catch-on phrase and such. I mean, I tried to study the general definition of it, but that's how my autistic mind interpreted the definition.
And
but
that's
simpler.
One of the things that is probably going away with a new DSM is that there was too much ambiguity there, that they had certain symptoms that you had to have certain fixations and certain behaviors to be diagnosed as autism. But if you had all the social problems but didn't have some of the fixations and things that they wanted you to have, they put you as PDD and OS, even though you were basically struggling with the same things in day-to-day life. You just didn't necessarily have the exact same symptoms as what they'd called autism. So one of the hopeful things coming out of the new DSM is that it's merging PDD and OS into the bigger picture, because they're realizing that it really is pretty much the same thing. It's just that they were being a little too strict on categorizing things.
And how will that be helpful? I'm sort of curious, not to get off topic, but
it'll be helpful because the problems they have and the treatments that can help them are basically the same things as that can help someone who was diagnosed with traditional autism. So if you have PDD and OS in terms of having what we consider classically autistic symptoms, or if you have autism, you still have the same problems at school or in social situations or whatever. You may just not have an extreme interest in trains, or one of the other things that they put as also being necessary for it to be autism. And that's one of those things where that's sort of being removed from the new diagnosis. So what we called Asperger's and PDD and OS fit the bigger category better, And autism was sort of a subset of it, and now it's sort of being merged into one. So it makes it easier for someone who would be PDD NOS before, if they get reclassified as autistic now, to get the help that they need. Because a lot of times with PDD NOS, the school didn't know how to help you, your insurance didn't necessarily cover things, and now you're just going to have autism. So
right.
If you really do have the same condition, which a lot of them do, it then gets you a better opportunity for the help you need.
Right. Yeah, and actually, speaking of DSM, it's coming out next month, so we're going to have to revisit that for sure. But yeah, PDD-NOS and Asperger's both will not be in the DSM as those titles. So Jay, you were telling us.
Sorry. That's all right.
So PDD, but important information for the listeners. So you were diagnosed with PDD-NOS, and then, so how did that this process evolve for you once you were diagnosed?
Well, I can tell you that it was because I went into elementary school straight away. I wasn't in preschool and such, and that's how the signs really became visible, that my mother, she was uncertain if something might be wrong with me, but she wasn't exactly sure. It was only when I got into kindergarten or such did the signs really become visible.
And what were the signs?
They were like saying, because and I cannot speak for any other autistic child that has gone through the same thing as I have, but I can tell you what I did. What I did was, because I'm not growing up in a familiar environment, this is a whole new world to me. Even though I'm around kids my age, I isolated myself from them. I didn't want to get to know them at all. I just sat with them, but I never spoke to any of them. Even my own teacher, I didn't really interact with her at all. I would just kind of like isolate myself from everyone else and just keep my inner calm in my mind. Because in the back of my mind, I'm going, where's my mother? Where's my mother? I don't see my mother.
Yeah.
So it's that uncertainty being in a room full of strangers. And yet through the therapies and the treatments I received over at least the first 3 to 4 years, so late 93 to early 97, I had to grow and accept to be around these kids, because I'm likely going to be growing up them through grade school or possibly into high school even for the rest of my life. And also I have to learn that my mom cannot always be there for me every second of my life. If I am in trouble or something, I need to talk to my teacher.
How did you keep the inner calm? You said inner calm, but to me, I sort of visualize that, that was in front of you pretty much. And
like a central need that you had, need.
But the nagging away of your – so what would – well, I mean, how did you develop that? That's interesting.
What I kind of did was, because I grew up with hobbies and such, and I did I'm a social media type of person, so – television, pop culture, whatever. So I would just like think about something, like a cartoon or something, or trains. I grew up, and when I was two, that's when Thomas came into existence here in the States.
Oh, Thomas. And, people may not know Thomas the Train, right?
Yep, Thomas the Tank Engine.
A big toy product.
And I loved trains growing up. My dad kind of also got me into trains and such, and my parents would take me to the train park, which is at Scottsdale Road in Indian Bend on the southeast corner there. And I loved being there because it was like being around trains and such, and like going, it was a nice atmosphere and such. It kept me calm, kept me curious, wanting to know. But every time I would watch Thomas and such, and once I had those short stories memorized and such, I would just, if I was frightened or something, I would just try to stay calm and such and isolate myself from everybody else in order to stay calm. And then I would just think about a certain episode and just play it in my head again and again to keep me calm until I was rest assured that the environment around me was all right.
That's an incredible skill set.
I see that a lot, actually, with a lot of people that I work with. Wow. is having that thing that's comforting, regulating, calming, and replaying it over and over is a mechanism to help sort of self-regulate when you don't really know what else to do or you're too frightened to sort of think of another, option.
That's a fantastic skill set, if you think about that, because a lot of people will panic, whether they're on the spectrum or not, but to refocus, to have that ability at a young age is just remarkable. That's a skill set most people never even think of.
Do you still have times where you need to do similar things?
Not really, because as I grew up, it was the development of my social skills that had to take precedence as well. I think it was by, I was into first grade. I definitely recall when the Suns were in the playoffs and such, and we had Elliot Perry and there, a.k.a. Sox, as we called them, and such. And we were playing the Portland Trailblazers in one time, and my first grade teacher, she recorded part of that game, such when he managed to shoot a three-pointer, and it was in Portland. And back then, we had a lot of fans in Portland. And I interacted with the class a lot, participating in class activities and such. We actually wrote a song about Elliot Perry and such, and that I remember participating quite possibly. But when Fox 10 came to interview us and such, and I do remember this quite vividly, even though I was a kid back then, I still remember
it
to this day.
How old were you,
do you think? Probably 6 or 7 years
oh,
old.
Okay, first grade, right?
Yeah, first grade.
Okay.
And every time I sat on the if you're looking at the TV screen, I'm off to the left, so technically to the right. And my eyes were glancing off and such. That's when where my teacher was. I wasn't focused at the camera. I was trying to stay focused on my teacher, the hand signals and everything we had to do in order to sing the song. So that was my focus. Like, I couldn't multitask. I had to stay focused on one thing.
One thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that makes sense. I mean, it's hard sometimes when you have trouble sort of, well, with the uncertainty element, having, you know, some anxiety being in a new environment and just all the social things and also the pace of things. I'm kind of wondering, a lot of times I see when things are moving fast, that kind of mechanism that you were talking about is something that people will employ to kind of feel that they can manage themselves as the pace is moving quickly. I mean, it sounds like with your eyes on the teacher, that was sort of maybe, because I mean, yeah, focusing from teacher to camera would be a very fast pace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fast-paced thing.
Yes.
So, but I see, yeah, I see that a lot. So, well, maybe we should take a short break. And then when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Jay. And any other announcements on that note, Dad, or what?
No announcement, but I find this really great and interesting. That will help a lot of people. Jay, I want to thank you. Absolutely. And we're going to come back and help some more people. We'll be right back.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches, 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking, and this is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. Kim Isaac in studio with Paul Loudon all the way from Houston, Texas, and our special in-studio guest, Jay Natio. And Jay, welcome. It's really, we really appreciate you sharing your experiences because it helps a lot of people. And it may help them in many different ways, not feeling alone, as well as learning certain things. And that also will help people.
Well, definitely. It kind of reminds me of what we were talking about yesterday. It helps people understand. And I love that, okay, it's Autism Awareness Month. And today here on Understanding Autism, we're making it April is Understanding Autism Month. So before the break, we were talking a little bit about some experiences you had when you were younger. And I'm wondering if, you know, you can think back to elementary school years, just like we were talking about, and sort of share some of the things that, you know, some of your experiences and events that happened for you and how you, you know, interpreted them and managed them. You know, off the air, we were talking a little bit about it. But can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. I will definitely say that probably anybody out there with either mental or physical impairment, disability, however you put it, is not the only one. You know, everybody does get teased or bullied sometimes. And yes, it has happened to me. It's not one of the best moments of my life. I mean, try being teased, not really picked on, but just teased by the same kid 2 years older than you for nearly two straight years.
That must have been really frustrating. So how did you, when this was happening to you, what were your thoughts? Did you recognize it as teasing at that time? Or
I didn't really, back then, as you know, 7 going on 8 years old, back then I really didn't know what teasing was or bullying was. I mean, I just, you know, in our mind process, I assume, you know, because you don't know what it is, you just take the words as they come and you interpret it how they may sound to you, however your mind interprets the tone of the voice going to you and all that
stuff.
Maybe
the literal, the actual language itself.
Yes, and it was just mainly name calling and such, and sometimes either jokes or insults, which I took everything as insults to me, and I just didn't know how to react other than, like, getting angry and such. That was the only emotion I knew how to react. And how I could tell is if I would get so mad, my head, and I assume people in past have all felt this and such, if ever they get really mad, you kind of feel like your head is shaking. little bit like an earthquake and such. And that would happen to me almost every time I got mad.
So was it internal anger, or did you express it externally too?
Externally and such, in terms of, you know, physical force and such. No, I never really did that as a kid and such. I did do that when it happened again by someone my own age in sixth grade.
What did you do?
And such. Well, I will say by the end of fourth grade, when this bullying and such, when his mother did find out, it finally did stop, and we did come to a truce, and we've been friends ever since.
Oh, that's
such.
Great.
So, yeah. And I've been friends with his sister, who is my age as well, and we've just been good acquaintances ever since then. In sixth grade, it was one of my own classmates, actually, who was kind of teasing me and such, just making jokes and insults, until it got to a point where I just could not stand it anymore. My mentality snapped. And so I ended up getting in a fight with him and such.
Like a verbal fight?
Verbal fight. It was a bit physical. Not where we really hurt each other, but just a little physical and such. But it was enough. And our principal at the time at Liberty, from I think it was about third grade through the sixth grade and such, his name is Sam Sinfrano, and he's a very nice gentleman and such. He knew of my diagnosis. He knew I was autistic and all that, but of course he never explained to me. All you know about autism then, if you were me, was that you had a bad temper if you were teased or bullied.
That's how
I understood it.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yep, that's how I understood. I didn't know what was wrong with me in terms of the learning environment in a classroom or anything like that. It was only when I was teased or bullied that I know I just had a bad temper, because that's how I would just react. That's all I knew was wrong with me. So he gave the kid I was in a fight with, he gave him the maximum day punishment of 3 days, because he was the one bullying me and all that. But for me, he did punish me. He gave me a 1-day suspension as a result, but and such. And I never got into trouble with him again. And again, he became my friend. In high school, we were good friends and such, and we're still good acquaintances.
That's a good story, because it doesn't always work out that way. I'm glad you had a very positive experience out of it. But
now, Kim, let me ask you a question, a follow-up on this. Now, that was, let's see, it must have been, what, about 12 or so years ago.
Mm-hmm.
As being a specialist in autism, has times changed? Would you discuss what autism means if you were working with Jay, and not let him, to his own imagination, think it's about anger?
Well, this is an excellent question, because I get asked this a lot from parents. Yeah. And the thing is, I am a fan of disclosure in that situation. A lot of parents are not. They don't want to. And the thing is, I think that it could be very dangerous to spotlight just an element of behavior versus what could be going on deep down, and offering, you know, some support and how to manage it versus just labeling it as a behavior. And again, that kind of goes back to our understanding versus awareness. When you see a behavior, you know, maybe this person's getting angry, and you think that you don't want that person to be getting angry anymore. If all you do is identify that behavior, you're not really helping them, you know, to learn what's really going on inside for them and how to develop from that point. So it's definitely a tricky subject. Some parents are very afraid to tell, especially younger kids. They're very afraid that it will scare them, upset them. You know, I've seen situations where in schools, you know, because there is a spectrum to autism, where a child who is less impacted is near or in a classroom with a child that is severely impacted. And they say, well, wait a minute, that person has autism. I have what that person has. You know, they can't see the spectrum the way that we can. So it's a little bit, it can be scary, and parents are afraid that it will throw their kids into depressions, or, you know, they don't want to put the label. And so something that I try to do with parents is I really just tell them to focus on the person's strengths and weaknesses. I mean, it really doesn't necessarily need a label. You know, if you just talk about things where maybe when you get overwhelmed and uncertain, you know, your feelings kind of get a hold of you, and we want to help you sort of to feel calm and to handle it, you know, the best way you can. It doesn't have to be just you do this, you do that. So it's definitely a balance, and parents have a really hard time deciding how to go about it.
Well, let me ask Jay, looking back now, 12 years back, how helpful or not would it have been if someone discussed, wait, it's not really about anger, it's something else? Would it have been created relief for you, a new way of looking at things? What do you think would have happened?
Well, possibly it might have altered maybe a little bit differently and such. I mean, anyone who is not mentally disabled or mentally impaired that develop in terms of brain development like autism is, they interpret it in their own different way. You know, it depends on how our nerve pathways and how our brain is reconfigured. It's just like the configuration. I would say the general way to put it is a configuration of how a computer is. The computer interprets different command signals that we input and such. So the same way when we hear something or see something, taste something even, with our senses, it depends on how our brain interprets it. And how I also responded to the treatments. Now, exactly what Dr. Melmed and my speech therapist, Nancy LaPrat, they used on me, I don't remember exactly. But whatever they did and such, it convinced Melmed and saying that I would tell my mom in later years as I was growing up that, yes, I am going in the right direction. I may not be severely autistic, but I may go just be from slight to mild, which is a good sign.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So I know sometimes, so we've been talking a little bit about the elementary years. So maybe we could fast forward a little bit and think about high school for you, because that's a big transition in a person's life, whether or not autism is involved. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what you remember about the high school years.
Sure. I can definitely tell you Horizon High School and the Paradise Valley School District. That's the district I grew up in all my life. And I went there from August 2002 through May to 2006. And I will definitely tell you that my high school life, as soon as I got in there, now the original prediction was, in terms of me academically speaking, Melmed and my mother thought that I would do average a 2.8 grade point average, maybe a 3.0 if I was lucky. Well, when I left Sunrise Middle School, which was next door to Liberty Elementary School, where I went to school, and went into Horizon, I entered there with a 3.543 already. So I was doing really good. And when I finished with a 3.423 when I graduated.
In high school. That's
excellent. So that was the top 37% of my class, about 511 kids altogether. It would have been 512. We lost a classmate prior to graduation and such, which was a bit shocking for everybody. But, you know, it was a fascinating experience. I didn't really struggle. The only thing I struggled in classroom environments was the amount of noise. This is teenagers we're talking about here. So instead of being calm and such, like saying in the morning, they're just tired or trying to wake up. Me, I was part of the school's televised announcements for 3.5 or 4 years. So therefore, I have to be awake regardless. But that was something I wanted to do. I said, since I didn't join in Sunrise Middle School, if Horizon's got a program, I'm going in there and no one's going to stop me.
Now, let me ask you. In high school, did you have to use that inner calm again, or was it just automatic at that point?
I didn't really have to use the inner calm tactic or such. I grew to accept being around my peers. I was making friends, and I did have friends growing up from, say, about end of fourth grade all the way through, such on and off and such. Mm-hmm. And there are some I have stayed in good contacts with now for the last at least 10 years. But it's just when... Like if it's one student or a couple of students that just, you know, keeps chatting and such while the teacher's trying to teach and I'm trying to learn and they won't listen to the teacher, in my mindset, I said, if they're not going to listen to the teacher, perhaps they'll listen to someone their own age. So I would just, just raise my hand or such, or even if I had to, I'd put my foot down and just say, guys, please be quiet. I cannot focus on learning here if you're making all this noise. And I do not like it when the teacher takes his or her, being angry on the whole class when it's technically just a small group of students. It's not me. I'm not causing any trouble. But you are.
And did they listen?
They did. They eventually caught on.
You're a leader.
Laying the smackdown.
I'm voting for you.
Here you go, Jay.
And such.
Interesting.
I say with autistic people, child or adult, it probably wouldn't matter what age we're at. There's only a certain amount of level of noise, like saying we as we grow up, we can take it for just a little while, but then it comes to a point where you say, no, I can't take it anymore. I just need a break for a bit. I just need to have just a moment of quiet for a moment and such. It's the same thing with learning in a classroom environment. It's only when you get to college and being in a normal college classroom and such does it really get better, because everybody's focused to get their degree and just, you know, get the credit necessary and just get out of there as quickly as possible.
I noticed that too, though, the college environment versus the high school environment. Well, people are choosing to go to college. You know, people go to high school, they don't really, I mean, I guess they have the choice, but it's more of the mandatory, you know.
Well, Jay, this just popped up in my head. It's like, how come the teacher didn't do what you did?
Well, the teacher, of course, it's by law, and I assume it is with every state, but I definitely know it is here. By law, there's nothing that says your child, either mentally or physically impaired, cannot be in a normal classroom. We can be, so long as the teacher is made aware of it. Reason being is, if your teacher does not know you have autism or any other mental or physical disability, he or she will not adapt their teaching style to your needs.
Oh.
And in fourth grade, that was the first evidence. I had to write a small book review and such. My teacher showed the report to my mother, and my mother said, oh, because I copied the book exactly word for word. And I didn't know what, you know, copying or plagiarism was back then. I just interpreted the instructions as my autistic mind did. And so my mom said, I have autism. So I say, okay. So technically, I'm supposed to give your son a zero. But now that I know he's autistic, now I know I have to give him some credit. So that's one of the funny things about autism and such that you look back on.
So the instruction was to do a book review, but your interpretation was to copy the book word for word. Mm-hmm. The whole book?
Kind of pretty much it was.
Wow.
Seriously, if you ask my mother about it, she'll tell you about it.
Did you feel that did that mean anything to you? Did you feel like, wow, this is a weird assignment?
Back then, I didn't know it. But when she finally, of course, told me about it, and I learned about it actually last year, I was like going, did I really do that? Because that's what Lisa Masters, the author of The Funny Side of Autism,
that's what I was
says
thinking
about
of.
Her
yeah.
voice. You yeah. know, and that goes happens with other kids, not just here in Arizona and here in the States, but also around the world, in England, Norway, wherever. You know, we do something that may seem a bit odd or embarrassing, but then when you look back and in the long term as a memory, it's actually quite funny.
I think we all do that. Like, I really do that long ago?
Well, Jay has such a great attitude.
Yes, you do.
He's just so positive and upbeat. And But that's just, I think, a characteristic of your personality. But actually, let's take a break. Wow, we had a lot to talk about. We skipped our other break.
Yeah,
but
definitely. Let's take one.
Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll finish our discussion with Jay Nadio. And you're listening to Understanding Autism.
Beerum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon all the way from Houston, Texas, and special in-studio guest Jay Nadio, talking about his experience of being on the spectrum from elementary school to high school, and now Kim and Jay and Paul. Something after
and
high
listeners.
School and listeners and Tommy. After high school, I know
we could probably do a 3-hour show on your whole experience, but I was thinking, you know, you're where you are in your life right now. You're 25 years old. I was just wondering if you could share with listeners a little bit about, you know, what your life is like, what you're doing currently and future goals and things like that.
Okay. Well, I tell you that I did go to college. I planned on it since my junior year of high school, so that was 2004-2005. And so I went to Scottsdale Community College because I chose that one for a reason. It had a very good television production program at the time, the 8th best in the nation and the only best one in the western United States outside of California. So I'm going, what do I need to go to California for television production when I got one good darn program here at the community college level in my own backyard?
Yeah.
So I went there, and I also learned if I take – the basic courses, the English, the mathematics, the sciences, psychology, sociology, I take all that at the community college level, then I can transfer all of that when I go to full-time at Arizona State eventually. And that took a little longer than expected. I stayed a year longer than I thought. I thought I'd do 2 years and such. But really the thing I learned is, you know, back in the old days and such, you could get, when my parents or my uncles were in college and such, you could get done probably within 4 years. Now these days, some can get it done if they really push. Otherwise, some take 4.5, 5 years, even 6 years to get done and such. But I said, just earn your degree at your own pace. Just know what you want to take. You got to plan ahead. I think of college as, and you know, school as like a game. Even you got to plan ahead in advance so you know what to do. And from your past experiences, you know you can apply what you learned in past to what's coming. So you can kind of anticipate, you know, a little something. True, you might encounter like a little curveball thrown at you or such. That's something you don't expect. But in college and such, the community college life was good and such. And when I transferred to ASU West at 47th Avenue Thunderbird, I met with the Disabilities Resources Center there under Patricia Toussaint. She was my advisor and such. I met with her, and I got to know her and such. And I had access to the amenities and benefits, taking a test in my own room if I had to, or anything else that I needed their help with. They would help me should I ask for it. So you have the amenities in college open to you. Just you need to know which college you do want to attend. If you do plan on it, look at their disability and resources centers, what they have to offer to help you, because you are going to be in a regular classroom with everybody else and with at least 50 to 70 kids. And I said, I don't want to be in a classroom any higher than that. That's my limit, because I want to ensure you talk to your professor one-on-one so he or she knows of your diagnosis. So like saying, this is how I've learned things. This is what you're going to expect from me. I'm just letting you know in advance. And yes, they have been willing to compromise. That's why I recommend ASU West. I can't speak for the Tempe or Phoenix or Polytechnic campuses, but ASU West definitely is a good school to
go to.
That's
good to know for the resources offered in colleges, because I've seen across the country such diversity in that area. I think that most colleges do have sort of a counseling department for disabilities, but not all of them have been, I guess, you know, positive in that they are really willing to help and help you make modifications and stuff. So it's good to know that you had a good experience, you know, here, and you have the support that you needed. And it's great that you were able to think it through and ask for help. And I think that's a skill and something to talk about with a lot of young adults who are, you know, about to transition, is to start thinking about those things, you know, the self-advocacy type type stuff. So you graduate from college. So what are you doing now?
Okay. Well, after I earned my Bachelor of Arts in History, my favorite academic subject and such, I love history. It's made every day. It's such every date that you look up, when you look on Wikipedia or something or such, you always learn something new or something in a subject of history that you like. Me, it's a naval history, 20th century naval warfare is my favorite, and all that, aerial combat and all that. And that was December 2011 when I finished. I finished a semester later than I thought I would. I thought of going to major as a teacher first, because I thought then that would be the best way to put a history degree to good use. But there's actually a heck of a lot more things you can do than just teaching. I mean, yes, I could go for a part-time substituting license should I ever decide to. But there are some, like me, working, volunteering in a museum or such. But you have to be familiar with the history of where you are. Like in Phoenix, for example, the only thing we got on naval history is in the Capitol building in a room dedicated for the battleship Arizona. That's really all we've got. So that's not much to go on. But you have to be willing to be open to everything else. And other than that, I work two part-time jobs, both of which are flexible. So when you're a college student, you need to learn which jobs to look for that they're willing to bend with your school schedule so you can have that nice balance, so you're not feeling overworked on either your job or your schoolwork, so you don't fall behind on anything. And I work for Professional Event Management. They're a public events company. I've worked for them since August 2008. So now I'm almost 5 years in with them. And we will be working an event like the Scottsdale Culinary Festival, which is this weekend, April 11th through 14th. And you will find me out there. I will be actually out there checking IDs and such, make sure anyone who is old enough to drink alcohol and such. And they're a nice company to work for, especially if you're a full-time student in school. And the other company I work for is Veterans Security. I've worked with them since late June 2011. And I've met both my bosses at Pro-Am and Veterans Security. Technically, my boss at Pro-Am, when he's out there, he's like director of operations and such. So he's not really the boss of the company, but he is kind of like it. And my boss at Veterans Security, they both have met each other at job conventions earlier in the year, and they both talk about me. They both know I'm autistic, which is good, because I heard that the unemployment rate for autistic adults, well, at least around, the age of, 22, is 90%. Oh. So you don't find very many autistic people. But the thing is, I don't know when I hear of it, I don't know how far on the spectrum they are. Are they like me? Are they close to beating their diagnosis, overcoming it? Or are they further up on the spectrum? Are they mild to severe? That I don't know. But I'm hoping that those numbers change, those numbers decrease and such, because, you know, you got to learn how learn how to live in this real world. Our parents can, our guardians can only take us so far, and we have to learn how to master this. As one of my mentors, my basketball coaches, Randy Walker, taught me and my friends growing up, we got to learn how to deal with adversity. It's part of the game of life. And unless you learn how to work with it and eventually master it, it's going to be one tough struggle after another. So that's one of the things we autistic people, and not just autistic people, anybody with
true.
A mental or physical impairment has trouble with.
I think that as far as the unemployment rate, I mean, I work with primarily adults on the spectrum, and that's a really huge issue. And the ones that I've worked with that are employed, a lot of times they've been fired from jobs due to just miscommunications, not understanding intent, you know, having difficulty, you know, reading intent within an interaction, and also just communicating in a way that somebody understands and doesn't necessarily take offense to, you know, monitoring their tone, things like that. I would love to see kind of, you know, more of that acceptance and willingness to learn more about neurodiversity and be able to, you know, support a person in the workplace and not just, you know, be quick to judge or quick to fire. And I know the Americans with Disabilities Act is helpful, but, you know, most of the adults that I work with, they really do struggle in that area.
Yeah.
So,
but it's hopefully things that will change for the better. I mean, I look at you're like Peter Weller, the actor who hosted Engineering and Empire, one of my favorite documentary series on History Channel. And it's like saying, I want to be like him, get to travel all over and such. It would be a similar thing with autism and such, because you would say, from the days of Temple Grandin from the 1950s, even all the way through to the 1980s, odds of getting diagnosed were 1 in 10,000. And that's even how it was when I was born in 87. But now, by the early 1990s, they said the odds were really getting worse and such. They went from 10,000 to steadily 5,000, then to 1,000 and such. And now, here in the States, at least to my knowledge, thanks to my uncle from Milwaukee, from a newspaper article he sent me a while back, he said, what I interpreted in the article, Arizona is like one of many 14 states that are considered what I call autistic hubs. But that's a good thing, because then we can help raise the awareness. Thank heavens, praise the Lord, for a place like the Southwest Autism Research and Resource Center. If it's not for people like Dr. Melmed or for Denise Ranzik, the mother who helped found that place, what the children there, like even 10, 15 years ago and such, what would they be like right now?
Yeah, things are definitely different. I remember when I got involved 16 years ago here, I mean, everything was just sort of new. And I know Denise Resnick, and she's done amazing things in the autism community, and Dr. Melmed, and forming that center. There's that center here in Phoenix has been a very valuable resource and support to many families here in Phoenix. And actually, I'd be interested in that article your uncle sent you, talking about, you know, which cities are kind of, I guess you said, the hub of autism. That's kind of interesting. I hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah, there are hubs all over here in Arizona, even in Milwaukee, of course, in New Jersey. I remember vividly, even Atlanta, even. And also to serve as a symbol for raising awareness and such, self-promoting yourself. Me, I say I have overcome my diagnosis, yet I'm going to exhibit traits for the rest of my life. But I don't care. It's part of who I am, and I'm proud to be autistic. I say that every single April, every single day of Awareness Month, and I say that for the rest of my life. I am autistic, and I'm proud of it. So AMTC, the Actors, Models, Talent for Christ program that I went into, go to Dallas, Atlanta, Phoenix, LA, wherever they are. They're all over the nation. Go to them if you love acting, modeling and such, singing, dancing, stand-up comedy, whatever. And it doesn't matter if you're autistic or whatever disability you may have. I told them I was there in Shine, Winter 2012, I said, I am here today because I overcame autism. that was one of my two major playing cards, plus being a recent college grad. And even though I didn't get the callbacks that I wanted, just one, but it raised the awareness and it self-promoted myself. That is the key. We must continue to promote this disability, make it aware, and eventually, in time, even if I'm not around to see it, we will beat autism. We will.
New career, motivational speaker.
I know. I was just thinking.
Oh, my, Jay,
thing.
That was very, very good. And I'm sure you're just touching a lot of people right now, as well as the caregivers, parents, teachers. This is certainly an inspiration. And your attitude is phenomenal, but your accomplishments, and it just seems you're going up and up
you
and
are.
Up and
it's,
up, and, yeah. and there's it, no stopping.
Yeah, it's not like a rapid climb. It's just like it's just one step at a time and yep. such. And that's why I also look in pop culture as symbols. I look up to Hilary Duff, Demi Lovato, Selena Gomez, anyone in that business who grows up gradually in the business and learns from it, learns how to grow up in the business gradually with the people, the kids their own age. They look up to them and such. And that's the kind of person I want to be, you know, not just in entertainment if someday, but hopefully with autism as well. Saying, hey, yes, it just depends on how you respond to your treatment and therapies. Hey, if I can beat this, no matter how where you end up on the spectrum, you will beat it. It's not a question if you can. You will beat it.
And that's a great way to end the show. We only have like a minute left, Kim and
I
Paul.
Know. Thank you so much, Jay.
Yes.
Really appreciate having
yeah,
you.
Kim, David, Paul, I appreciate. Thank you for having me come back. I hope you can invite, you know, Lisa Masters to come back, or even my teacher, Eric Francis. He has the oldest daughter is autism. Anyone in the autistic community here in Phoenix, there are so many people that would love to get their stories out, just like at the Action for Autism Radiothon KTR just did. We raised $391,000+ this year. So stories like that, they deserve to be told.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. Jay, very much appreciate it. Paul Loudon, we'll see you next month.
Mm-hmm.
Kimberly, see you next month. This is fantastic, the show. I really enjoyed it. And tomorrow, Breakthrough Sports, Real Hockey Talk, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, other sports. Have a good night.